Welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier on IRIS. It's Monday, September 19th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Let's check today's weather forecast from KCRG Cedar Rapids. Plan on a nice start to the week with a mostly sunny sky and highs into the lower 80s. Tomorrow features a surge in temperatures into the upper 80s and lower 90s, before a substantial cool down later in the week into the mid-60s to low 70s. This strong cold front will probably pass through dry, though there may be an isolated shower sometime on Wednesday as the front moves through. Look for lows well down into the 40s for a couple of nights, with an isolated upper 30-degree reading not out of the question in the valleys of northeast Iowa. There's a slight chance of a shower with an approaching warm front later Friday into Friday night. Now, the front page of the Courier has these stories. U.S. Census concerns flagged in new report. Game developers stepping back, fighting Alzheimer's step by step. And we begin reading the top story, Biden's pay respect to the Queen. The Bidens are among thousands paying respects to the Queen. This story comes to the Courier via the Associated Press and begins with a photograph of President Biden signing a book of condolence at Lancaster House on Sunday in London following the death of Queen Elizabeth II. Dateline London. U.S. President Joe Biden paid his respects at Queen Elizabeth II's coffin on Sunday as thousands of police, hundreds of British troops, and an army of officials made final preparations for the Queen's state funeral, a spectacular day of national mourning. That will also be the biggest gathering of world leaders in years. People across Britain paused for a minute of silence at 8 p.m. in memory of the only monarch most have ever known. At Westminster Hall, where the Queen is lying in state, the constant stream of mourners paused for 60 seconds as people observed the minute of reflection in deep silence. In Windsor, where the Queen will be laid to rest on Monday evening after her funeral at Westminster Abbey, rain began to fall as the crowd fell silent for the moment of reflection. Some have set up small camps and chairs outside Windsor Castle, with plans to spend the night there to reserve the best spots to view the Queen's coffin when it arrives. Quote, "Well, it's just one night and day of our lives, Elizabeth gave us, you know, 70 years. So the rest of it is not a lot to ask, is it?" asked Fred Sweeney, 52, who kitted out his spot with two Union flags on large flagpoles. Biden and First Lady Jill Biden were among thousands of mourners, from locals to tourists to royals and world leaders, to pay their respects. The president made the sign of the cross and put his hand to his heart as he stood quietly near the casket in the ornate 900-year-old hall with his wife and U.S. Ambassador Jane Hartley. Biden then signed the official condolence book and attended a reception Sunday at Buckingham Palace, hosted by King Charles III. He is one of 500 world leaders and royals invited to the Queen's state funeral Monday, along with hundreds of dignitaries, politicians, military veterans, and British charity workers. Biden called Queen Elizabeth II, quote, "decent and honorable and all about service," as he signed the condolence book, saying his heart went out to the royal family. Quote, "Queen Elizabeth lived her life for the people," Jill Biden wrote in a book for spouses and ambassadors. Quote, "She served with wisdom and grace. We will never forget her warmth, kindness, and the conversations we shared," unquote. One no-show will be Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, whose invitation drew criticism from human rights groups because of the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi inside the Saudi consulate in Istanbul in 2018. Saudi Arabia is expected to be represented by another royal, Prince Turki bin Mohammed. As the dignitaries poured in, the clock was ticking down for those seeking a place in the longest queue many have ever seen to file past the Queen's coffin. The miles-long queue was expected to be closed to new arrivals later Sunday, so that everyone now in the line can view the coffin before Monday morning, when it will be taken to Westminster Abbey for the Queen's funeral. Family by family, thousands of people kept joining the line around the clock, braving chilly overnight temperatures and waits of up to 17 hours in the queue that stretched over 5 miles. Lauren Wilson, 36, was in the much shorter queue for people with mobility problems. She said she wanted to experience in person the coffin lying in state. Quote, "The world is in such a weird place, and then this happened. It feels more momentous," she said. She worried that the pageantry surrounding Elizabeth's death deprives the Queen's relatives of the ability to come to terms with their loss. Quote, "The family are not allowed to grieve. I find it quite heartbreaking," she said. The Queen's 8 grandchildren, led by heir to the throne Prince William, circled the coffin and stood with their heads bowed during a silent vigil on Saturday evening. Among the foreign leaders in London was New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, who told the BBC she was humbled to represent her nation at the funeral and to witness the national outpouring of grief and respect for the late Queen. Quote, "The thing that I will take away from this period is just the beauty of the public's response, the kindness that you see from members of the public, the patience, the camaraderie. That has been, for me, the most moving tribute of all, has been the public response of the British people," she said. Monday has been declared a public holiday in honor of Elizabeth, who died September 8th at 96, after 70 years on the throne. Her funeral will be broadcast live to over 200 countries and territories worldwide and screened to crowds in parks and public spaces across the country. Police officers from around the country will be on duty as part of the biggest one-day policing operation in London's history. Camilla, the Queen consort, paid tribute to her mother-in-law in a video message saying the monarch, quote, "carved her own role as a solidary woman on a world stage dominated by men." Quote, "I will always remember her smile." "That smile is unforgettable," said Camilla, who is married to Charles. Ukraine's First Lady, Olena Zelensky, was also among the mourners paying respects to the Queen's coffin. British royal officials said Zelenska met with Catherine, the Princess of Wales, at Buckingham Palace on Sunday afternoon. They did not release further details. The British government has been among the strongest supporters of Ukraine since it was invaded by Russia in February. On Saturday night, it was the grandchildren's time to mourn. William and Prince Harry, Charles's sons, were joined by Princess Anne's children, Zara Tyndall and Peter Phillips, Prince Andrew's daughters, Princess Beatrice and Princess Eugenie, and Prince Edward's 2 children, Lady Louise Windsor and James Viscount Severn. William stood with his head bowed at the head of the coffin and Harry at the foot. Both princes, who were military veterans, were in uniform. The crowd kept slowly, silently filing past. Quote, "You could see that they were thinking hard about their grandmother, the Queen," said Ian Mockett, a civil engineer from Oxford in southern England. Quote, "It was good to see them all together as a set of grandchildren, given the things that have happened over the last few years." The next story was written also by the Associated Press. U.S. Census concerns flagged in new report. 1,400 census takers were hard fails. And the story opens with a photograph of a census taker showing her briefcase with the United States Census Bureau insignia on it. Some census takers who falsified information during the 2020 count didn't have their work redone fully, weren't fired in a timely manner, and in some cases even received bonuses, according to the U.S. Commerce Department's watchdog group. The findings released Friday by the Office of Inspector General raised concerns about possible damage to the quality of the once-a-decade headcount that determines political power and federal funding. off-campus students at colleges and universities were likely undercounted since the census started around the same time students were sent home to stop the spread of COVID-19 in March 2020, the review found. During the 2020 census, the Associated Press documented cases of census takers who were pressured by their supervisors to enter false information into a computer system about homes they had not visited so they could close cases during the waning days of the census. Supervisors were able to track their census takers' work in real time through mobile devices that the census takers used to record information about households' numbers, demographic characteristics, and members' relationships to one another. As a result, supervisors would get alerts when actions raised red flags about accuracy, such as a census taker recording data on a home while far away from the address, or a census taker conducting an interview in just a few minutes. As a quality control check, other census takers were sent back to homes to re-interview residents. The Inspector General's probe concluded that some alerts weren't being properly resolved, some re-interviews weren't properly conducted, and that the work of some census takers, whose work had been flagged for falsifying data, had not been reworked to fix its accuracy. In fact, some census takers, whose work was flagged for falsifications, were given more cases, weren't fired, and were reassigned to other operations, the report said. Of the 1,400 census takers who are designated hard fails because questions about the accuracy of their work, only 300 were fired for misconduct or unsatisfactory performance. Of the 1,400 hard fails census takers, 1,300 of them received bonuses ranging from $50 to $1,600 each, the report said. The census is the largest non-military mobilization in the U.S. Data gathered during census determines how many congressional seats each state gets. The numbers also are used for redrawing political districts and redistributing $1.5 trillion in federal spending each year. Because of that, undercounts can cost communities funding. The 2020 census faced unprecedented challenges, including the pandemic, natural disasters, and political interference from the Trump administration. In response to the Inspector General's report, the Census Bureau said it appreciated the concerns that were raised, but disagreed with the conclusions that data quality may have been damaged since the report cited only a small number of cases out of the overall workload. Quote, as a result, we asserted that the findings could not and should not be presented as a conclusive assessment of overall census quality, unquote, Census Bureau Director Robert Santos said in the written response. Under Census Bureau rules, college and university students should have been counted where they spent the most time, either at on-campus housing or off-campus apartments, even if they were sent home because of the pandemic. Most schools didn't provide the Census Bureau with off-campus student data, and the Bureau had to use a last resort, less accurate statistical tool, to fill in the information gaps on more than 10% of the off-campus student population when they were given the information, the Inspector General report said. Schools often didn't provide the data because they didn't have information on off-campus students or because of privacy concerns. The Inspector General recommends passage of legislation that would require schools to provide needed information in future headcounts. Quote, although difficult to quantify, the fiscal implication of specifically undercounting off-campus students at the correct location for states and localities is potentially far-reaching, the report said. The city of Boston, which is home to Northeastern University, Boston University, and several other schools, said in a challenge to its census figures that the count missed 6,000 students. The next story was filed by Andy Malone, game developer stepping back. The developer of Jackpot Party Casino embarks on a new stage of life. Dateline Cedar Falls. Aaron Shireman began developing his first game with a childhood buddy at Lantern Square Apartments while attending the University of Northern Iowa shortly before the turn of the century. That was only the beginning for the 1990 Janesville High School graduate, who went on to co-found Phantom EFX with Danny Stokes. Most games in the era were sold as a disc in a package the size of cereal boxes. More than two decades later, the company, now known as SciPlay, is a leading publisher of digital casino, casual, and bingo games on mobile and web platforms. Its portfolio of games includes the ever-popular Jackpot Party Casino, which has come to be associated with the well-known brands and icons like actress Sofia Vergara and the James Bond 007 series. Sherman, at 50, is entering a new stage of life as he takes on a reduced role within the company. The founder and chief gamer, SciPlay, envisions an evolution, his version of retirement. It means less involvement in the day-to-day operations. Quote, there's always an emergency. You're always recruiting. There's always a speech. There's designing a game, said Sherman. Quote, there's always something going on, so you don't get as much time with the family, he noted. That was probably the driving emotion. While still planning to play a role in developing games and by serving as a company consultant, he said the shift in responsibilities will leave time for other endeavors. He is also one of the founding members of Red Cedar, a local startup catalyst, and a partner in the group that owns Paramount Barco. That company is in the midst of growing its portfolio of restaurants and bars, which includes Cedar Falls' Main Street favorites, The Stuffed Olive, Roxy and Double Tap, and other markets. Quote, I can't sit still because I'm an entrepreneur. I want to grow some of my other businesses into national brands like we did with Phantom, Sherman said. Quote, sci-fi is so large and important in so many markets and to so many investors. I want to nurture that, but grow other companies as well. And I want to help new entrepreneurs, unquote. Phantom's first headquarters was in the River Plaza building in Waterloo and later in Cedar Falls, before the building was wiped out by the flood of 2008. Since then, it has been in Cedar Falls Technology Park. After being acquired twice, Phantom EFX spun out, rebranded as SciPlay, went public in 2019, and now has close to 700 employees in places like Chicago, Austin, Texas, but also in countries like Israel, Turkey, and Finland. Millions of people play their games, and the company generates millions of dollars each year in revenue. Sherman said the company's success came from understanding the importance of partnering with recognizable brands. It also has been forward-thinking and was ahead of the curve in realizing the future importance of building a presence in various app stores. Quote, we were on iPhone the day the App Store opened, which was fascinating because Apple wasn't even 100% sure the app was going to work, Sherman said. But looking back over the years, he is most proud of the people he's been around and the culture he's cultivated amidst all the transitions and company growth. Quote, I love people. It's one of my core strengths, he said. I'm an activator of things that make them great. Quote, if I get a chance to meet somebody, that's fantastic. I love encouraging them to do something that's in their wheelhouse and helping them grow, unquote. Sherman's love of electronic games stretches back to when he was 16, growing up on a farm north of Waterloo Regional Airport. That's when his mother, Sherry, bought him his ColecoVision gaming system. After high school, in the 1990s, Sherman ended up serving in the military, including time in the U.S. Space Command during the Iraq War, helping to knock out Iraqi Scud missiles. He credits that time of his life with what got him interested in software development. He got his Management Information Systems degree from UNI in 1998 and was thinking about returning to the military, but instead, the company took off once the first game, Real Deal Slots and Video Poker, landed on retailers' shelves. He spent a lot of time in Denver, Colorado, near where the Space Command is headquartered. Once Phantom EFX had been founded, though, he decided that the Cedar Valley was where his family and company should grow. Quote, "I love the big city life, but it's hard to make those deep, deep connections with people," Sherman said. And he says the decision to base the company in Cedar Falls is one of the area's best-kept secrets. Quote, "I grew up around here and fell in love with the area," he said. "You don't see a lot of high-tech companies here. Especially when we started it 25 years ago, there was a great void of it, and a lot of people in the industry thought I was crazy to develop in Iowa." Quote, "But I think Cedar Falls was honestly been one of our secret weapons because we've gotten great talent here. Retention's high, the costs are a little bit low, and it's been fantastic," unquote. Next we have Fighting Alzheimer's Step by Step, Alzheimer's Fundraising Walk planned for Saturday. Story written by Maria Cooper, Dateline Cedar Falls. Christine Hess will be leading over 200 people on a walk Saturday to increase awareness of Alzheimer's disease. And the story begins with a photograph of people marching holding plastic flowers. And the caption says, "Friends and family with connections to Alzheimer's disease raised their flower-themed pinwheels during the 2017 Walk to End Alzheimer's event at Riverfront Stadium in Waterloo. The Alzheimer's Association Walk to End Alzheimer's will be held at Pete Junior High School starting at 9 a.m. Hess is the walk manager for the event. She began participating with her family about 10 years ago after her grandfather, Fred Emkus, was diagnosed with the disease. Emkus died last year. Quote, "He thrived and loved being a grandfather. He'd take us on long bike rides, get ice cream, get down on the floor to play, and made a good effort to be friends," Hess said. Quote, "We just clicked. He was so funny and brought a lot of joy into my life," unquote. On walk day, participants will honor those affected by Alzheimer's with Promise Garden flowers. Purple signifies that they have lost someone with Alzheimer's or dementia. Yellow means they support or care for someone with the diseases. The color blue shows they are living with the disease, and orange means the walker supports treatments. The Alzheimer's Association has a goal of raising $65,000. Last year, $43,000 was raised. The money goes towards helping the association provide care and support to families in Iowa, while also advancing research toward methods of treatment and a cure. More than 6 million Americans live with Alzheimer's disease, and it is a leading cause of death in the U.S. More than 11 million people provide care to people living with the disease. In Iowa, there are more than 66,000 people with the diagnosis and 73,000 caregivers. Registration for the event begins at 8 a.m. Live music will be provided by Steakhouse. Abby Turpin, formerly of KWWL, will be this year's MC. The event offers both 1 mile and 2 mile routes. The 1 mile route will go down East Searley Boulevard, Grove Street, University Avenue, and Valley Park Drive. The 2 mile route will go further down University Avenue, turn onto Waterloo Road, and go back on East Searley Boulevard. Both groups and individuals can sign up for the walk at act.alz.org. Registration is free, but Hess said if $100,000 is raised per registrant, they will receive a free T-shirt. She encourages people to register beforehand, but paper registration will be offered the day of the event. And now we turn the page to the Northeast Iowa Area Escapades. This is a regular Monday offering from the Courier. Here are just a few of the events, shenanigans, and goings-on worth checking out this week in the Northeast Iowa area. On Wednesday, September 21st through Sunday, September 25th, the National Cattle Congress Fair welcomes fall. A Ferris wheel, livestock exhibits, rodeo, and Tom Thumb mini donuts. It must be time for the 112th Annual National Cattle Congress Fair. This year's event will feature the annual dairy shows, carnival, free entertainment, Estill Hall exhibitors, and 3 nights of rodeo. There also will be motocross, trapeze, Hillbilly Bob, the Rodini Hypnosis and Magic Show, bands performing in the pavilion, including Throwback Jack and Deja Blue, and food trucks. The fair's annual Home Arts and Horticultural Show will take place in the Agriculture Building, featuring the Mayor's Cookie Jar Contest, King Arthur Baking Contest, Quilt and Horticulture Contest. Fair gates open at 9 a.m., and the admission is $6 for children ages 6 to 12, $10 for 13 and older, $8 for seniors ages 60 and older, $5 for veterans, and free for children ages 5 and under. Kids' Day is Friday, and Family Day is Sunday. Carnival hours are 5 to 9 p.m., Wednesday, 5 to 10 p.m., Thursday, noon to 5 p.m., and 6 to 11 p.m., Friday and Saturday, and noon to 5 p.m. on Sunday. Next, on Thursday, September 22nd, gear up for Thursday night bike ride. Thursday is supposed to be breezy, the perfect evening for the We Ride series, a community bike ride that encourages beginners and casual riders to get active and participate in organized rides. The ride starts at Waterloo Bicycle Works, 316 West 3rd Street, number 2 in Waterloo. On-site registration and bike safety tips start at 5:30 p.m. The ride leaves at 6:15 p.m. All rides are free and open to the public. Co-sponsor is We Arose Co-op. Also on Thursday, September 22nd, Andy and Judy to perform at Cedar Falls. New England natives Andy and Judy Daigle have been singing together since 2009 and wrote their first song as a duo in 2011. They've recorded over 80 original songs and produced 7 albums. The folk duo will perform a 1-hour show beginning at 10 a.m. Thursday at the Cedar Falls Community Center, 528 Main Street. Their performance is presented by the Cedar Falls Public Library. On Saturday, September 24th, Paul Reiser brings comedy to Cedar Valley. Comedian, actor, writer, and musician Paul Reiser will perform his stand-up comedy act at 7 p.m. Saturday at the Gallagher Blue Doran Performing Arts Center in Cedar Falls. Reiser is one of the most prolific creators in Hollywood, now starring in 2 hit shows, Stranger Things and The Kominsky Method. A veteran Emmy-winning actor, Reiser starred in the hit TV series Mad About You and has been praised for his roles in Diner, Bye Bye Love, Aliens, One Night in McCoo's, Beverly Hills Cop, and The Thing About My Folks. Tickets are going fast, available at gbpack.com, the GB Pack box office, or by calling area code 319-273-4849. Also on Saturday, Pear Fair to feature regional artisan. The annual Pear Fair, an open-air indie craft fair, takes place from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday at the corner of 22nd and College Streets in Municipal Lot G. The curated showcase features local and regional craft and design. It was founded by Mohair Pear in 2010 as a way to introduce customers to artists who make the handmade gifts carried in the shop, as well as new and unique crafters. Also on Saturday, September 24th, is the Walk to End Alzheimer's and Raise Funds. Registered to walk and raise funds to further care, support, and research efforts of the Alzheimer's Association. The event begins at 8 o'clock a.m. at Pete Junior High School, 525 East Searley Boulevard, Cedar Falls. There is no fee to register, although each participant is asked to make a personal donation. Register online at their website. And lastly, on Sunday, September 25th, explore Cedar Falls history on Cemetery Walk. Fairview Cemetery, 1350 West 12th Street in Cedar Falls, will be the gathering place for anyone interested in hearing stories about Cedar Falls' early citizens involved in the city's ice industry and the Ice House Museum. The event is Sunday, beginning at 2 p.m. It will take place rain or shine. Suggested donation is $5. The walk ties into the museum's Fire and Ice exhibition, focused on the history of ice harvesting in Cedar Falls, now open at the Victorian House Museum, 308 West 3rd Street. And now here the Courier lists festival dates for the area. Guttenberg's German Fest is Friday and Saturday. Oktoberfest in the Manna Colonies is September 30th through October 2nd. Maddie Poppy Concert and Fall Festival in Jessup is on October 1st. Fall Arts and Crafts Festival in McGregor is October 1st and 2nd. Waverly Oktoberfest is October 7th and 8th. Pumpkin Fest in the Manna Colonies is October 22nd through 23rd. Madison County Covered Bridge Festival in Winterset is October 8th and 9th. And lastly, Thanksgiving Weekend Festival in Waterloo is November 25th and 26th. And now, listeners, at this time, we want to remind you that you're hearing the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, September 19th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Olwine. Rick Myatt, 61, of Olwine, Iowa, died September 17, 2022, at Mercy One in Olwine. The funeral service for Rick will be at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, September 21, 2022, at Zion Lutheran Church in Olwine. Visitation is 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m. Tuesday at the Jameson Smiths Funeral Home, Olwine, and for 1 hour before the service at the church on Wednesday. Interment will be Woodland Cemetery in Olwine. Memorials may be directed to the Rick Mott family, Post Office Box 614, Olwine, Iowa, 50662. An online obituary can be found at www.jamesonsmithsfuneralhome.com. Rick worked as a route driver for Colonial Bread for 10 years and then was a route driver for City Laundering for over 20 years. And now let's turn to the opinion section. This is an editorial written by Maureen Dowd of the New York Times, and she titles it, How Low Can They Go? Dateline Washington. Donald Trump will be remembered for many things. He injected obscenities into the New York Times White House coverage. He turned conspiracy theory into Republican orthodoxy. And he cut out the middleman on ugliness, happily doing the political wet work himself. The Bush family had retainers like Lee Atwater, who would hand off the dirty tricks and the scaremongering Willie Horton stuff to outside groups and used direct mail and radio ads. Trump dispensed with the idea that the candidate was above it all. He was excited to show that he was beneath it all, the naked id of the Republican Party. His soulless followers, like Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott, are happy to mud wrestle and perform grand guignol as well. In some ways, it's easier to battle racism, sexism, xenophobia, and fakery when the principals are gleefully spewing it. You can fight back on the record and in real time. In other ways, however, having it all out in the open sends a foul stench through American politics, intensifying the brutish and bleak mood of the country. Politicians who purport to be guardians of American values are rewarded for being inhumane. The nastier, the better. Republican polls have gone from kissing babies and rope-line handshakes to full-on viciousness. I asked Trump during the 2016 campaign why he had gone so dark. Quote, I guess because of the fact that I immediately went to number one, he replied. Quote, and I said, why don't I just keep the same thing going, unquote. As it turned out, he was spinning up the mob, laying the groundwork for a violent attack on the Capitol. Trump riled up the mob again on Thursday in an interview with radio host Hugh Hewitt. If he's indicted on a charge of spiriting away classified documents to his Mar-a-Lago estate, the former president said, there will be, quote, problems in this country, the likes of which perhaps we've never seen before. I don't think the people of the United States would stand for it, unquote. Trump created the cynical and boorish template for other presidential hopefuls on the right. It can be amusing to mock elites, but there's something exceedingly creepy and blatantly opportunistic about DeSantis chartering two planes to send some 50 migrants, mostly Venezuelan, from San Antonio to Martha's Vineyard. The lawyers for some migrants said that they were deceived about their destination, and Martha's Vineyard officials said they had no notice. Abbott sent two busloads of migrants to Vice President Kamala Harris's home at the Naval Observatory. It was reported that a woman who said her name was Perla offered the migrants in Texas 3 months of rent and work in Boston. But they ended up, as one put it, quote, on this little island, unquote. This caper to expose the hypocrisy of Democratic elites ended up being compared to human trafficking. The Republicans are exploiting people's misery for a political game. The migrants simply want to work, which a bunch of Americans don't want to do anymore. With their pre-midterm publicity stunts, as with their draconian push to outlaw abortion, the Republicans are increasingly letting politics take precedence over people. The argument that migrants coming across the border have a more severe impact on border states is obviously valid. You can't have a nearly unchecked flood of people coming in, an average of 8,500 a day, according to Axios. It is also a vivid criticism of Democrats, both in the White House and Congress, are going out of their way to avoid what they see as a third rail with progressives. The border is just the tip of the spear. Democrats are too afraid of angering the base to bear down and overhaul the system, including tackling the backlog of court cases and fixing how those cases are adjudicated. President Biden ignores the border, giving it to Kamala Harris to get under control. We all know that's not happening. Republicans like Marco Rubio and Lindsey Graham, who once tried to work on solutions, have now just degenerated into using the border issue to bash Democrats as flaccid. But the contentions of Republicans about geographical unfairness and Democratic inaction are undercut by their mean-spirited behavior. They are willing to make life worse for vulnerable, exhausted people who are already in a terrible position and chortle while they're being cruel. As Blake Hounshell noted in The Times, DeSantis is courting Trump donors by adopting the racially charged playbook of Trump, who, quote, made frequent and aggressive political use of Latino migrants during his run for the presidency in 2016, and long thereafter, casting many of them as criminals and rapists during his presidential announcement at Trump Tower. The callousness of DeSantis's manipulations is clear. Ugliness is what the GOP is wearing this fall. Now, here is an opinion piece written by Randy Evans, and it first appeared in the Storm Lake Times Pilot. It's titled, Savvy Voters, Don't Let TV Ads Mislead You. Televisions are getting larger, but that does not make it easier to decipher the political ads that are as common these days as gnats at a picnic. There is one thing we should understand about these ads. Their purpose is not to educate voters or inform them about the finer points of a candidate's views. Instead, their purpose is to scare us or mislead us or just confuse us. One such example tells Iowa TV viewers that U.S. Representative Cindy Axne, a Democrat from West Des Moines, refuses to sign a pledge to support term limits for members of Congress. It is true Axne has not signed the pledge being circulated by U.S. Term Limits, a Washington, D.C. advocacy group that is working to pass limits on the length of service by state and federal elected officials. The group's goal is to keep so-called career politicians from taking root in our government. The organization favors a constitutional amendment that would restrict members of the U.S. House to no more than 3 2-year terms, and members of the U.S. Senate to 2 6-year terms. It is true that Axne's opponent, Zach Nunn, a Republican from Bondurant, favors term limits for people serving in Congress, but the ad does not give voters a complete picture. Philip Blumel, the president of U.S. Term Limits, praised Nunn last year. He said, quote, "Zach's strong support of term limits shows that there are individuals who are willing to put self-interest aside to follow the will of the people," unquote. Blumel added, quote, "America is in trouble. Our career politicians have let the people down," unquote. Unsaid in the ad targeting Axne is an uncomfortable fact of life for Iowa Republicans. Axne is not the only Iowan serving in Congress who has not signed the U.S. Term Limits Pledge, according to the group's website. Two of Iowa's most prominent Republicans, Senators Chuck Grassley, a New Hartford Republican, and Joni Ernst, a Republican from Red Oak, are absent from the signers list. Two other Iowa Republicans in the U.S. House also have not signed the same pledge that potential Axne voters are being warned about. Ashley Hinson of Marion and Marionette Miller-Meeks of Ottumwa are not on the U.S. term limits list of Iowa signers. Only U.S. Representative Randy Feenstra, a Republican from Hull, has signed the pledge. Irony overflows from the term limits ad. You do not see similar television ads filling the airwaves about Grassley being one of those dreaded career politicians, and he has been elected to the Iowa House, the U.S. House, and the U.S. Senate since 1959, 6 years before career politician Cindy Axne was born. In fact, the only current member of Iowa's congressional delegation who was alive when Grassley was first elected was Miller Meeks, and she was only 3 years old. Grassley has a birthday coming up soon. There will be 89 candles on Grassley's cake on September 17th. He was 25 years old when he was first sworn into the Iowa House. There were only 49 states in the Union when he first took office. Alaska had become a state only the week before, and Hawaii would not be admitted to the Union until August of 1959. The U.S. Term Limits Initiative is trying to rid Congress of politicians that many voters would prefer to keep. You don't need to be a Harvard University debater to make a case that the easiest way for citizens to express the will of the people about the longevity of their elected officials is when voters cast their ballots in each election. Whether everyone agrees with Iowa voters or not, they have made their feelings known by returning Grassley to office each time he has appeared on the ballot. The same occurred with Governor Terry Branstad and U.S. Senator Tom Harkin. Grassley told reporters in January, quote, "You have to realize the ballot box is term limits if people don't want you in there. That's kind of the way I look at it," unquote. And that's the way I look at it, too. Randy Evans is the executive director of the Iowa Freedom of Information Council and a longtime journalist and editor in Iowa. Here's a short editorial written by Art Collin titled Brain Drain. Iowa and other rural states lead the nation in brain drain, where college graduates are lured away from home to metro complexes built around research hubs and information technology. It's where the capital and people flow. 80% of venture capital goes to a few clusters: New York, the Bay Area, Los Angeles, D.C., Austin, and Boston. What is someone with a fresh electrical engineering degree supposed to do in Storm Lake, for example? How can you pay off that student loan for a chemistry major in Sac City? You go where the money is. As a result, the Washington Post data analysis team notes that Iowa bids farewell to 40% of its college graduates annually. Minnesota has a brain gain, despite colder weather and higher taxes, thanks to the Twin Cities and its deep reservoir of sophisticated manufacturing. Of course, we've been sending kids off the farm since we plowed the ground, but not at this rate. We have gone from almost no tuition at state universities to being a national leader in student debt load. Tuition will rise at the state universities next year. The Iowa tuition grant for private college students will not grow against inflation. Yet Governor Kim Reynolds this week urged President Joe Biden to take back his offer of limited student debt relief. Lower student loan payments might be the difference between a teacher choosing Iowa over Minnesota. You might not have to move to an exurb of Chicago if you could afford to live in Humboldt. We are shooting off our youth by saddling them with ever higher education costs from VOTEC to baccalaureate. Highly skilled people will choose rural places if they can make a decent living. Upstate New York filled up with Big Apple refugees during the pandemic because they could afford to enjoy life there. People who want to enjoy living near the Little Sioux River do not have the same choices, particularly because we drive out talent by disinvesting in rural economies. Think if we cut that brain drain by a quarter. What kind of innovation and new enterprises would it create in Iowa if we could keep those scientists here, creating new ways to prosper from the land? Imagine the human and financial capital that would accrue if our best and brightest were not forced out of Iowa by our own state policies of de-appropriating higher education. There is no limit to what Iowa could achieve. Instead, we give up our sons and daughters to the Twin Cities, Chicago, and Kansas City, because we have a governor who thinks the ball and chain of student debt is costume jewelry. Now let's continue reading local news in the Courier. This next story was filed by Andy Malone. First ever Iowa Insurance Division Smart Her Money Conference comes to Cedar Falls. Dateline Cedar Falls. The first ever Insurance Division Smart Her Money Conference is coming to Cedar Falls next month to give women the knowledge and confidence needed to make financial decisions. Manisha Thakur, founder of MoneyZen.com, will headline the event and give a one-hour-long keynote address about how to own your finances, own your life. Quote, something magical happens when women talk about empowering themselves, their daughters and mothers, and are in a room together and are learning this type of material, Thakur said during a telephone interview. While the target audience is women, men are welcome to attend, said Sarah Larson, an event spokesperson. The information is best suited for adults and young adults and older teens. The October 17th event is free, but people are asked to RSVP. It will be held from 8:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at the Bienvenue Event Center, 7400 Hudson Road. Larson hopes to get 300 attendees, and about 100 have already signed up at her smarther.iowa.gov. The deadline to RSVP is October 3rd. It is not the first time Thakur, a Harvard Business School graduate and small-town Indiana native, has given the speech, but it's the first time she's delivered since the height of the COVID-19 pandemic, meaning it will touch upon the unique state of the world as a result and the higher expenses people are facing, Thakur said. She'll address the headwinds that women often face, but not men, whether that be earning less and living longer, or working less because of having to care for a child or an elderly parent. Another hot topic, she said, will be how to deal with competing demands when cash flow is tight. Does one put it into a college or retirement fund, or use it to pay off credit card debt? A third focus will be addressing how women often start investing their savings later than men, sometimes because financial literacy lessons don't often speak to them, or are simply boring and mind-numbing. Next in the story filed by Maria Cooper, one person hurt in Waterloo shooting on Sunday. Waterloo. Police are investigating after one person was shot early Sunday. Officers were dispatched to 746 Conger Street just after 2:30 a.m. and found a 19-year-old man shot in the arm while inside the house. He was transported to the Unity Point Health Allen Hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. No other information was available. Next is a story that comes to us from the Globe Gazette journalist Lisa Garout. Body identified as North Iowa woman. Northwood. A North Iowa woman has been identified as the deceased person found in rural Worth County on Friday. According to Worth County Sheriff Dan Fank, a resident called to report that they had discovered a female body in the Shell Rock River while on a regular morning walk near the intersection of 390th Street and Raven Avenue, southeast of Kensett. The body was identified as that of Melissa Jo Olson of Northwood, according to a press release by the sheriff's office on Saturday. The area in which the Olson was found was a shallow portion of the river with no trail access to the water. On Friday, Frank said it was unclear how long she had been in the water, but he didn't believe her body had traveled downstream. Iowa Department of Natural Resources officers on the scene kayaked the surrounding waters to search for evidence, and a drone was deployed to observe the location, but the sheriff declined to say whether any foul play was suspected. Now let's see what the sports page has to offer. Let's begin reading the story about the Hawkeyes game. A long, strange night. Hawkeyes play the right cards, shut out the Wolf Pack. Story filed by Steve Batterson. And begins with a photograph of Iowa running back Caleb Johnson as he runs the ball into the end zone to score during the fourth quarter of the Hawkeyes' win over Nevada at Kinnick Stadium, Dateline, Iowa City. Showing up at Kinnick Stadium with a full deck of cards proved advantageous Saturday night for the Iowa football team. Regaining the services of receivers Nico Reganey and Keegan Johnson, a healthier helping of starting running back Gavin Williams, and the emergence of true freshman back Caleb Johnson helped the Hawkeyes move closer to full strength in a 27-0 victory over Nevada. That full deck of cards came in handy as well in allowing Iowa to navigate through three weather delays. Totaling that kept the teams off the field for 3 hours, 56 minutes because of lightning in the vicinity. The delays were the second ever at Kinnick Stadium, the first since during the 2011 season opener against Tennessee Tech, and the first for Iowa since play was halted in a 2019 game at Iowa State. Coach Kurt Ferentz and his team spent the breaks in a variety of ways. Quote, somebody brought some cards. I'm sure they had them in the hotel from Friday night. So a couple of card games were going. Guys were doing all sorts of things, Ferentz said. It was kind of interesting, kind of unusual in a football locker room, that's for sure. Hawkeye players were offered sandwiches during the longest of the three breaks in play, lasting 1 hour and 50 minutes. And while some talked and joked with each other to keep things together, others stretched to keep loose, and others talked shop to be ready once play resumed. Quote, the big thing was to be ready when we got back on the field, Iowa defense back Cooper DeJean said. With the stoppages that sent teams into the locker room and forced the evacuation of fans seated in outdoor areas, Saturday's night game stretched into Sunday morning. The game ended at 1:39 a.m., 1 minute shy of 7 hours from the Iowa kickoff, its final tune-up for the start of the Big Ten play. By then, a maligned Iowa offense led by senior quarterback Spencer Petras showed some cohesion, gaining 337 yards, and the Hawkeye defense had recorded its first shutout since a 20-0 win at Northwestern in 2019. Quote, you go 60 minutes broken down over 7 hours, not easy to do, Ferentz said, praising the team's focus on resiliency on a different night of competition than most had ever experienced. It also proved to be a breakthrough night for Iowa, which had totaled just one touchdown and 14 total points in its first two games of the season. Quote, it was great to see all the guys in the huddle again, Petras said. To get Nico back, to get Keegan back, Brody, it was good to have them all out there, unquote. Petras finished the game completing 14 of 26 passes for a season-high 175 yards and one touchdown. Caleb Johnson, taking on an expanded role of LeSean Williams, was away from the team following the death of his father a week earlier, responded with the first 100-yard rushing effort of his college career. The 6-foot, 212-pound freshman from Hamilton, Ohio, ran for 103 yards on 7 carries, including a touchdown run of 40 and 55 yards in the first and final quarters. Quote, he's been in the other games, but hasn't really looked great, Farron said. It was good to see him run with confidence. He got a little bit of daylight and knew what to do with that, unquote. Iowa, which gained more than 20 yards on plays from scrimmage just twice in its first two games, doubled that number before taking a 17-0 lead into the locker room at halftime, finding an offensive rhythm that had been missing during the Hawkeyes' 2 7-point efforts to open the season. Petras completed 9 of 16 passes for 104 yards in the first half. Quote, to get a shutout is always gratifying, Farron said. It's representative of the kind of work the guys have been doing. They were aggressive, played well, and did a lot of good things, unquote. The Wolfpack missed their only scoring opportunity, a 57-yard field goal try by Brandon Talden that went wide right with 5 minutes 18 seconds left in the third quarter. And now, listeners, that's going to do it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, September 19th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And we want to thank you for listening to your IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.